depression. And many of his hymns reflect his experience. There are things that happen in life that we don't understand. But he says it's all about God and his mysterious ways, and he plants his footsteps. There's something deliberate about what he does. And isn't that a lovely verse? Deep in unfathomable mines of never-failing skill, he treasures up his bright designs and works his sovereign will. And we're going to look tonight at a little bit of the experience of Joseph. And this wonderful account we have in the book of Genesis about his life and the things that happened to him. And he didn't have an easy life. There were many painful things that happened to him. When he got to Egypt and he was exalted, and we'll come to that later again, but he married and he had two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. And Ephraim was given the name Ephraim because it means being fruitful. And then he says it is because God has made me fruitful in the land of my sufferings. We often think about being fruitful as Christians, don't we? Of being blessed as Christians. And sometimes it happens in the context of suffering and of pain. We've been thinking on Sunday mornings about growing in grace and in the knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. And one of the ways in which we grow in that knowledge is as we go through experiences which we really would rather not go through. But God is at work, and God made Joseph fruitful in the land of his suffering. That's really what we're going to just look at this evening. The theme really is this: living with integrity in times of adversity. Living with integrity when everything is going wrong. When things are happening we just cannot possibly understand. And yet carrying on living as a believer and being conscious of God. When I was in Deeside, I preached a series of sermons on Joseph. And I had read a book called God's Heroes by a man called John Hercus, in which he looked at particular characters in the Old Testament. I read his chapter on Joseph, and I thought, yes, that's the key to understanding Joseph. Basically, John Hercus, as many other people say, that Joseph really was a bit of a spoilt brat. And basically, God had to straighten him out. So he put him through the mangle a few times, a bit like the figures we saw this morning, all crumpled. And by the time you put it through the mangle a couple of times, he's probably getting the idea of what you want to teach him. So that's how I preached on the series of Joseph, that God was putting him straight and making him the man that he needed to be. Now, of course, he was being made the man he needed to be, but some years later, I did a series of Bible studies on Joseph. And I started off with the same approach. And a lady in the congregation came to me and said, you know, the way you're saying we should understand Joseph, she said, I've been reading a commentary, and she said, that man says that that's not how we should understand Joseph at all. Rather, we should understand Joseph as a righteous man who suffered. And really, Joseph is a type of Jesus. That is, he points forward to Jesus, who was a righteous man who suffered. And it wasn't God punishing him and straightening him out. He was a man who lived with integrity, but he still suffered. And he's an example of how to live when everything's going wrong. And as I went back to the passages, I thought, yep, that's the right way to come at it. Because you see, sometimes in our own Christian lives, when things are going wrong, we have that feeling that God is sort of putting us through the mangle. You know, we say, well, we're sinful people. We need to be straightened out, and that's what God is doing. He's disciplining us. He's doing out of love. But it really hurts. And sometimes it's so painful, it almost destroys us. And when we think about Joseph's experiences, they were really painful experiences. They weren't short. They went on from years. For years, we meet him at the age of 17. And it's only at the age of 30 that he comes to prominence in Egypt. 13 long years. But what we see in Joseph through it all is a young man who acts with complete integrity, even when everything seems to be going wrong. He was a righteous man who suffered unjustly. And in that sense, he points us forward to our Lord Jesus Christ, who also suffered unjustly. So I want us just simply to look at the context in which Joseph suffered. Because there wasn't one situation where he had difficulty, there was one after another. And they were each painful and perplexing. We meet him first in the context of his family, and it was an unusual family. But the issues that he grew up with were favoritism and jealousy. He was the first son of Jacob's beloved Rachel, the wife whom he had loved from the beginning and wanted to marry first, but he had married Leah instead because he was tricked by Laban. And, Jacob made no secret of the fact that Joseph was his favorite. You know, imagine you're giving presents to the children, you give them all a present, and then you bring out some super present for one of them. And that's what really Jacob does. He has this coat, this ornamented coat, the NIV calls it, coat of many colors is how we think about it. And says, well, here are boys, here are all your presents. I hope you like them. Now, Joseph, I've got something special for you. Put it on, Joseph. And Joseph puts it on. It's his dad's favorite. Now, that's not his fault. That's his father's fault. It's his father who had a favorite son. It was a family where there was polygamy. There were four wives, Leah, Rachel, Bilhah, and Zilpah, the two handmaids. And the wives were jealous of each other. And Leah wasn't loved. It was something of a dysfunctional family, but that wasn't Joseph's fault. We don't choose the family that we're born into. But we're born sometimes into families where there are real problems and real difficulties. And Joseph has to deal with that. And most of the brothers are older than he is. And if you've had an older brother, you know, they're not always easy to live with. Because they're bigger than you are, they're stronger than you are, and they're further on in their education, and they can make life very difficult for you. We're told that when Joseph was with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, they were younger brothers than some of them, but he brought a bad report about them. I don't think that's necessarily doing a wrong thing, just saying, this is what they did. Not telling tales out of school. He's just simply saying they weren't doing what they should do. But you can imagine that didn't make him very popular with them. And in the things that happened to him, it's the older brothers, Reuben and Judah, Leah's brothers, Leah's sons, who are dominating the situation. And in fact, Leah's sons dominate the family, especially the eldest four. And the sort of words you come across in the situation when he's in the family is they hated him. It wasn't they just didn't like him. They hated him. And they were jealous of him. And those sort of powerful things can be in a family. A family which should be a secure context where we're cared for, but is actually very dysfunctional. So he's his dad's favorite. He didn't choose that. His dad chose that. His brothers hate him because of that. And they resent him, and they're jealous of him. And there in the family, God begins to reveal himself to Joseph. Because Joseph has dreams. And as you read the accounts in Genesis, you realize that dreams are one of the ways in which God communicated with the people of that time. Jacob had dreams. And Joseph has dreams. And the dreams are about, in one case, sheaves of corn in the field, and all the other sheaves bow down to his. And in the other case, the sun and moon and 11 stars bowing down to him. And when he has those dreams, which are obviously special dreams, the first time God has revealed himself to Joseph through dreams, he simply tells his brothers and his father what the dreams were. And they understand it. They don't need it to be interpreted. And they say, do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule over us? And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. Now, as you read the story of Jacob's family, these sons were to be the heads of the tribes of Israel. But the characters of those brothers was not particularly good. But here's a young man whom God is revealing himself to. But when he reveals himself to him, it increases the hatred. It increases the jealousy and the antagonism. And really, both Jacob and, to a greater extent, the brothers act unspiritually towards God's revelation. It can happen sometimes in a family that God is dealing with someone in the family, and yet others hate it, and they hate the person because of that. And so here's Joseph. He's a young boy. He's a lad. He's one of the youngest children in the family, and almost everybody else is older than he is. But he's acting with integrity. When things aren't done properly, he tells his dad. When he has a dream, he shares it with them. He's not trying to claim some greatness. He's just simply recording what is happening to him. And so there in the family, the place where he should have been protected, he's got hatred, jealousy, and they can hardly speak to him. And that gets worse, because his father sends him to go to the brothers who are looking after the flocks, and he goes to see how they are. His reason for going is to just check everything's okay. Probably taking some food with him as well, as they took the flock from place to place, trying to find a place of grazing. And he has some difficulty in finding them. But when he can't find them in the place he thought they were in, he doesn't sort of say, "Oh, well, I can't be bothered to look for my brothers. I'll go back and tell my dad I couldn't find them." He keeps on traveling until he finds them. But when they see him coming, their hatred reaches a new depth. Because when they see him coming, they say, "Let's kill him. Here comes that dreamer." And the issue here is the dreams that he is going to be prominent. And we'll kill him, we'll throw him into one of the cisterns, and we'll say that a ferocious animal devoured him. And then they say this, "Then we'll see what comes of his dreams. We'll put an end to his dreams, his big ideas, we'll kill him." And that'll be the end of that. As we're going through the story of Joseph, you can see so many links with Jesus. We'll put an end to him, we'll kill him, and that'll be the end of him. And then Reuben says, "Well, no, don't let's kill him. Let's put him into a cistern, and we'll just put him there." He hopes to rescue him. And so when Joseph comes, they take his robe off him, and they throw him into a cistern. And there's no water in the cistern. Now, that probably means he's got nothing to drink, rather than that he wasn't in danger from water. And then they sat down to eat. And the impression you get is he didn't get anything. And then these traders come along. And they're on their way to Egypt. They are people who don't know God. And their camels are carrying all kinds of spices. And then Judah, one of the older brothers again, he speaks up and says, "What will we gain if our brother, if we kill him? Let's sell him. Let's get some money for him. We'll sell him to these Ishmaelites." And he says, "After all, he is our own flesh and blood. So we'll sell him to be a slave." And they all agreed that would be a good idea. So they did. And they took 20 shekels of silver. Shekels, about 8 ounces of silver. And they got a price for him. And then the Ishmaelites took him to Egypt. And when Reuben comes back and is upset that Joseph isn't there, they take his robe. Here they are plotting. Here's his family. They want to kill him. Then they sold him as a slave. And they had this silver, which they got as a price for him. And then they take his robe and they daub goat's blood on it. And they take it back to their dad and says, we found this. They don't say what happened. What do you think happened? And Jacob assumes that Joseph has been killed. It's a dark situation, isn't it? And meanwhile, Joseph is heading off to Egypt. I don't know how he got there, but he probably walked most of the way. It was hundreds and hundreds of miles. And if you paid a good price for someone like that, and he was a good boy, he was healthy, he was probably tied as well. He'd lost his freedom and his liberty. And every mile took him further and further away from his father and his family. He was on his own. And you think, here's this boy, and he's lived in a family that hates him, and brothers who are jealous of him. And now he's going to be a slave in a foreign land. And yet, in a sense, you know, Joseph gets to that point now where he can only trust in God. There's nobody else. No, his father's not there anymore. His dad's not there. Benjamin, his brother's not there anymore. It's only him and God. And he goes down to Egypt and he's sold to Potiphar, one of the officials of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard. And he's a slave. Potiphar looked at him and he was in good condition. And he paid a price for him. And the Midianites made a profit on him. And now he's a slave. There's this boy who's grown up as his father's favorite son. And now he's a slave in Potiphar's house. And you get, nevertheless, through the whole of the story, that he maintains his integrity. You know, one of the great tests, isn't there, for any of us, if we've grown up in a Christian family, is when we go away from home. Go away to work, go away to college or university. How do we live when there are no longer pressures on us? But Joseph maintains his integrity, and he is a totally trustworthy man. He doesn't adopt the ways of Egypt. He doesn't evolve their pagan ways, but he lives according to the things that his father and his grandfather had told him about God and about his promises. But he's doing it amongst people whose language he didn't understand at first, whose ways he didn't understand. And he's a slave to Potiphar. He's there to do his master's bidding. And so this antagonism and hatred of his brothers, his life is spared, but only just. And he becomes a slave. And while he's there in Potiphar's house, he proves himself faithful. God's hand is on Joseph. And we're told more than once he prospered as he lived in the house of Potiphar. And when his master saw that the Lord was with him, now Potiphar didn't know the Lord, but he could tell there was something about this boy, a believer. And the Lord gave him success in everything he did. Potiphar could see it. He was thriving in the most unhelpful of situations. And so he's put in charge of Potiphar's household and everything he owns. In fact, he's done it in such a way, the only thing Potiphar has to worry about is what he eats. Everything else, Joseph looks after, because Potiphar knows he can trust Joseph. And Joseph is also competent to do things. He's a slave, but he's able. And, well, things seem to be looking up. It seems he didn't live in the house, because we hear about him coming into the house. He lived outside where the slaves lived, but he was in charge of Potiphar's house, and he was trusted there. And perhaps he thought then, well, things are looking up. But another problem comes, of another kind. And we're simply told that Joseph was well-built and handsome. And it wasn't long before Potiphar's wife saw him, and he was a slave, and you could do what you liked with slaves. So she says to him, I want to sleep with you. And she felt she had the right to tell him that that would happen. But Joseph answers, again, with complete integrity. His master's not around. There's no one around. He might have said, well, there's no one here, you know. And perhaps he finds her an attractive woman. But he's got a clear sense of what is right and wrong. He says, with me in charge, my master doesn't concern himself with anything in this house. Everything he owns, he is entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master trusts me, he says. And my master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. And we hear the Ten Commandments haven't been given yet. But he knows what's right and wrong. He knows God's moral law. It's written on his heart. And he's withheld. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even to be with her. And I think Joseph is partly saying here, this is a temptation. This isn't as if he's saying, well, I'm not interested in you. He's a man, and he's being tempted by this woman, and he's saying, my master trusts me, and I must be faithful to that. And not only that, I live before God. And I can't do this wicked thing. And he refuses. But she keeps on enticing him. And one day, as they're on their own in the house, and she approaches him again, and he refuses. And he runs out of the house. That's what the Bible tells us. Flee from immorality. Flee from places of temptation. He runs away. But she's got his cloak. And she makes an accusation against him. And she says to her husband, you know this Hebrew slave, your slave, the one you brought into our house, do you know what he's done? And she tells a lie about him, a false accusation. And now his character is being attacked. Now he's being told, people are being told he's an immoral man. And when Potiphar hears, he believes his wife, he believes that Joseph has betrayed him, and as a result of that, Joseph is put into prison. He's a righteous man. He hasn't done anything wrong. He doesn't deserve to be in prison. But we're told that he was put into the prison of the Pharaoh. He was put into the strictest of prisons. And he was confined there. He's going to be there for years. And here's a man who's being faithful. He's living in integrity. He's conscious of God, and he stands against temptations. And here's this false accusation, the anger of his master. Potiphar, who trusted him, is now angry with him. And he's put in prison for something he hasn't done. And his reputation has been accused. You know, sometimes things happen to us when our reputation is tarnished. And most people believe accusations that are made. You know, people say, oh, no smoke without fire. Be careful when you believe things of people because a report says it. This man had done nothing wrong. But the accusation said he was an immoral man. So he's lost his family. He's lost his liberty. He's become a slave. Now he's being treated like an immoral, untrustworthy man. And he's in prison. And what does he do again? Well, while he was there, the Lord was with him. And he showed him kindness. And he granted him favor in the eyes of the prison ward. He was a model prisoner. He did everything that was asked of him. And it wasn't long before the warder put him in charge of the prison. And the warder paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care, because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. But remember, this success, this blessing, is in the context of suffering. Painful, terrible suffering. Just think of going through that experience yourself and wondering how you would be. And he's just living as God wants him to live. He's showing complete integrity. And it seems that he was never cleared from the stigma of immorality. We never hear that Potiphar said, I realize now that you didn't do it. Because just as the brothers went back and told lies about what had happened to him, Potiphar's wife told lies about him, and lies sort of stay with you and stick, don't they? And the brothers are living an unreal life with their dad for all those years than what they did with the money, pretending Joseph was dead, and they knew he wasn't. And it went on for year after year. And in the middle of it all, this dark and sordid story in many ways, there's this young man, and he's living with integrity, and he is trustworthy. Everywhere he goes, he's trusted, and he's put in charge. And then in prison, these two men come to the prison. One's the cupbearer of Pharaoh, and the other the baker, the chief cupbearer, the chief baker. And while they're there, they fall out of favor with Pharaoh. They have dreams. And they come to Joseph, and they ask what these dreams mean. And Joseph answers, do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me your dreams. And the cupbearer says, well, I had a dream. And he said, there was a vine in front of me, and there were three branches, and they budded and blossomed, and all the clusters ripened. And Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes, squeezed them into Pharaoh's cup, and put the cup in his hand. And Joseph said, yes, the three branches mean 3 days, and in 3 days you'll be back in your position, and you'll be giving the cup to Pharaoh. And so the baker says, well, that was a good interpretation. What about mine? And his interpretation was of carrying some bread, and there were three baskets, and the birds were eating them out, the bread out of the basket on his head. And, well, his interpretation is that in 3 days he will be executed. And what Joseph said by way of interpretation happened. The cupbearer went back to Pharaoh, and the baker was taken out to be executed, to be hanged. And as the cupbearer went, Joseph said, don't forget me. When you get back to Pharaoh, please tell him what has happened. For I was forcibly carried off from the land of the Hebrews. And even here I've done nothing to deserve being put in the dungeon. Please put a word in for me, will you? But the cupbearer didn't remember Joseph. He forgot him. And it's 2 full years later that Pharaoh has his dreams. This is going on over a long period. Just think about every discouragement. Living with the tensions at home. Being sold as a slave. Seeing his brothers as he disappears on his way to Egypt. Being accused. Potiphar's anger. Being put into prison. And then hoping that the cupbearer, waiting every day for a knock and say, "Oh, the cupbearer's put a word in for you. And the Pharaoh wants to review your case." Nothing. Silence. No glimmer of hope. Because the cupbearer has forgotten. Until Pharaoh has dreams. Dreams about cattle. Fat cattle and thin cattle coming up out of the river, out of the Nile. And the thin cattle eat the fat cattle. And the same with a stalk of ears of corn, and the thin, poor ears of corn eat the fat ears of corn. And nobody can interpret the dreams. And suddenly the cupbearer says, "Oh, I've just remembered. There was a man in prison. You remember, Pharaoh, you weren't pleased when you put me in prison? Just remember. There's a man in prison who's an interpreter of dreams. And he told us what our dreams meant, and he was right. They both came true." And Pharaoh calls him out and has Joseph brought to him. And we're told that when he had shaved and changed his clothes, he came before Pharaoh. And I don't know whether he hadn't shaved for a while and he sort of tidied himself up, or he just had the sort of daily shave. But he was going to be in the presence of the most powerful man in the world. Egypt was the superpower of the day. And Pharaoh tells him his dreams. And Joseph says, "I can't interpret dreams, but God will give Pharaoh the answers he desires." And he tells him then that there are going to be 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine. And the repeating of the dreams are because God has firmly decided what he's going to do, and it's going to happen soon. And then he says to the Pharaoh, "Look for a discerning and wise man and put him in charge of the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh appoint commissioners over the land to take a fifth of the harvest in Egypt during the 7 years of abundance. Collect it all up, and then when the famine comes, there'll be plenty of food for us all." And Pharaoh said, "That's a good plan." And he said to the officials, "Can we find anyone like this man, in whom is the Spirit of God?" This man, Joseph, as he comes out of prison, to shave and get himself looking tidy to be in Pharaoh's presence. But he's God's man. He's a spiritual man. He's not the product of his circumstances, because God has been with him through his sufferings. And he has grown. And he is a man of ability. Pharaoh recognizes that. And so he appoints him. And he says to Joseph, "Only with respect to the throne will I be greater to you." He goes to Potiphar's house, he's in charge. He goes to the prison, he's in charge. Now, he's in Egypt, and he's in charge. Because the Pharaoh reckons the kind of man that he is. He's a man of outstanding integrity, outstanding ability. Even though his life has been so tragic and has been so sad. And in fact, as he rides in the chariot behind Pharaoh, the men shout, make way, or bow down." Suddenly, here is Joseph. And he's in that place of prominence. And he marries, and he has children. And he speaks about how God has made me fruitful in the land of my suffering. That's a great encouragement to us, isn't it? That God can make us fruitful. Even in the most difficult of circumstances. You see, we have this idea, well, if everything goes right, if I don't have many problems, or not too many big problems, I should be okay. But in the goodness of God, even when all things seem against us, to drive us to despair, he is there and he is with us. The bad things that are happening are not a sign of his disapproval. He's not beating us up and punishing us. But he's giving us grace. And he gives more grace as the burdens grow greater. And that's what Joseph is all about. He just given grace and he thrives and he blows. And also, perhaps one of the most remarkable things about him is that he's not bitter. He's not resentful. When he meets his brothers later, he reveals himself and he says,
Do you know who I am? I'm Joseph, your brother who you sold into slavery. That could have been a really bad moment for them, couldn't it? That could have really been payback time. But it isn't.
Because Joseph knows that there's something bigger that's going on. God sent me here to save lives, he said. You see, the dreams were not his big ideas. They were God revealing to him what was going to happen to him. And in an interesting way, as you look at the story, you see that every step of the way was bringing him to where God wanted him to be. How could he come to that place of prominence? How could he come to be Pharaoh's right-hand man? Well, because God moves in a mysterious way. His wonders to perform. This Hebrew is there. And eventually Jacob and the family will come down into Egypt. And there they will prosper. And there they will become a nation. Because God's in it. The things that run were wrong, but God's in it. And his hand is upon Joseph. And Joseph is thriving in the most amazing circumstances. Because true godliness doesn't depend on our circumstances. If everything goes well with us and we've got a lovely home, we've got plenty of money, we've got plenty of success, that doesn't make us godly. It may, but it doesn't automatically make us godly. Other people go by the darkest paths and the most difficult ways. And in those deep, unfathomable mines of never-failing skill, God is treasuring up his bright designs and working his sovereign will. They found a very big diamond in Sierra Leone this week, the biggest diamond they've ever found. And God works diamonds in his people. And sometimes through the most terrible of circumstances, and Joseph is one of those diamonds. You see, often when things are happening to us, we say things like, well, I can't see how this is of any point. I can't see much point in this. How can this be of any purpose to God? This is just nothing but negative. No, it isn't. In the hands of God. And we've got to trust him for his grace. Judge not the Lord by feeble sense, but trust him for his grace. Behind a frowning providence, he hides a smiling face. We may go through dark times, but the light of God's countenance, the light of his love for us in Jesus Christ, is just the same. Blind unbelief is sure to err and scan his work in vain. God is his own interpreter. And he'll make it plain. And that's what he does. He makes it plain. And here is Joseph in the chariot. And he thinks, this is what it's all about. This is what the dreams were all about. And God's word revealed through dream was true. And he'd been trusting him. Lord, I don't understand what you're doing. But I trust you that you're going to bring me where you have promised. And isn't that true of much of the Christian life? We don't understand the way he leads us. We don't understand the things that go on in our lives. But God is treasuring up his bright designs. And one day he'll bring us not to Pharaoh's right hand, but to the right hand of his power in heaven itself. And everything that happened to Joseph is so much reminiscent of what happened to Jesus. And Peter in his first epistle writes to people who were slaves in the first century. He talks about they are to behave, particularly when their masters are not very kind and caring. He says, but how is it to you? Well, let me go back. For it is commendable if a man bears up under the pain of unjust suffering because he's conscious of God. That seems to be Joseph, doesn't he? He's conscious of God through it all. He doesn't understand, but he's conscious of God. But how is it to your credit if you receive a beating for doing wrong and endure it? But if you suffer for doing good and you endure it, this is commendable before God. To this you were called, because Christ suffered for you, leaving you an example that you should follow in his steps. We thought about that this morning, following in his way. You suffer unjustly? So did Jesus. You've gone through pain? So did Jesus. You feel you're alone? So did Jesus. There's a sense of mystery? So was there for him. My God, why have you forsaken me? And we're to follow in his steps. Think of a father stepping out with a son through a snowy field, and the father's putting his steps in the snow, and this little boy behind him is trying to put his feet into the steps his father has made, and they're big steps, and he can't quite do it, but Peter's saying that's what we're to do. We're to follow in his steps. He committed no sin, no deceit was found in his mouth. When they hurled their insults at him, he didn't retaliate. When he suffered, he made no threats. Instead, he entrusted himself to him who judges justly. And he says, follow him. Is God leading you at the moment through strange ways? You don't understand what's going on. Things go wrong. Not just one thing, but many things. One thing after another. They're not small things, they're big things. And there are times when you pray to God and you say, Lord, why is this happening? I don't understand it. Well, Joseph didn't understand. But every step of the way, God was bringing him to that place where he wanted him to be, not only for his own blessing, but for the saving of many lives. And when his second son was born, he said, we'll call him Ephraim, which means twice fruitful. It is because God has made me fruitful in the land of my suffering. And God can make you and me fruitful in the land of our suffering too. Amen. Let's sing together.